Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their insights, their expertise, and their time with us to help us grow in our businesses. Today, I am joined with Zach Corbridge. But before we get into that, just a reminder, my name is Gary Lafter, your host, CEO and founder of the Authority Accelerators, where we drive profits and revenue to our tech partners by elevating their expertise and turning them into authorities so that they are the ones who get chosen by their clients as opposed to them having to chase. So as I said, today I am honored to have Zach Corbridge today, and we are going to be talking all things about being different, standing out, resilience, and overcoming setbacks. So without further ado, Zach, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Why don't you start off by giving us a little bit of background about who you are and how you got started and where you are today?
Sure. Yeah. I'll give you more of a condensed version and thrilled to be here, Gary. My path to where I am is a lot of this. And so I'll try and condense that a little bit. I started my career with the Walt Disney Company doing strategy. I was coming more from a finance background, and that served as just an incredible launching pad to the rest of my career, but also put me on a track of really looking, you know, when people think of Disney, they think of a lot of things, good or bad. But they certainly think of customer experience and creating unique and memorable experiences. And so that's been a theme for me. But since that time, ended up in a lot of different areas, was in the Caribbean for a while, working, and then ended up in commercial real estate, and I did a master's degree there, and then finally we end up in tech, which is really where I thrive and have the opportunity to bring so much of what I learned, not just from my Disney days, but since then, as far as utilizing today's tools to create what is memorable and impactful experiences for users.
Quite a journey, Zach. I mean, going from Disney into tech via real estate, commercial real estate, you know, that's actually quite a journey from that. So I'm intrigued. Help me out there. How have those experiences, like you said, even from the Disney, about client services, looking after your clients, commercial real estate, it's still a business, to tech. What kind of experiences did you pull from those that you utilize today, which you would think is an absolute no-brainer you must do if you're running a business today?
Sure. I would say first and foremost, always looking at it from the perspective of the client, the partner, whoever it is that you're serving in that moment or at that time, and looking for not only what they seek and what's valuable to them, but looking at how you can differentiate yourself and create what would be a memorable experience and meaningful experience or product, whatever it may be, for them. I would think that has been the takeaway. Being creative, you know, even in real estate where people don't think, you know, it is a lot of just do the numbers make sense, a lot of P&Ls, a lot of pro formas. But at the end of the day, how do you think creatively? How do you differentiate yourself from what has become whether it's tech or real estate, what has become a very saturated environment? How do you stand out? How do you differentiate yourself and provide something that is unique and doesn't just get lost in the mix?
Well, I'm looking forward to diving into those as we get into our interview today, because that is what people will be listening here saying, absolutely, one of my challenges is standing out. So don't worry, guys, we're going to be diving deep, deep into this. But before we get into this, I want to talk about mindset. You know, everybody who is listening to this who's an entrepreneur knows that everyone looks out and looks into us as entrepreneurs and goes, oh, they just go from here to here. Here's the start. Here's where they are. It's a nice straight line, and this is the growth. But we all know that it's not like that. It is a constant battle on a daily basis of challenges that we have to deal with. And you had to overcome quite a big challenge earlier on when it came to losing your funding. Why don't you talk us a little bit through that, about what happened, and if you can, kind of what happened and how you were affected by it and what you did to get past it?
So what a lot of people would have at the time called a really stupid move. I had just finished a master's degree in real estate and was neck deep in that space and enjoying it. And a unique opportunity came up with a longtime friend and now business partner of mine to go and run some deals, run some impact projects for a high net worth individual. Very high net worth individual who had like so many had made a lot of money through crypto, but he was funneling a lot of those funds not into great, really philanthropic and impactful projects, but also a number of deals. And so we had an opportunity to kind of roll up our sleeves and get involved and spearhead a lot of these things. And we were kind of on cloud nine. In fact, I had just taken the leap from real estate and this guy was funding everything that we were working on. We had spent a week in New York. At the time that trip was focused on a mental health tech platform that we wanted to build. And we flew in all the best minds in mental health, and it was just electric. It was an incredible week. And we came home thinking we're going to conquer the world. The world is our oyster. And within about, I'd say 72 hours of getting home, this particular individual was his home was raided by the FBI, and he was taken in and charged with a number of charges related to some of the work he was doing. And so overnight, our funding dried up. Reputations were pretty well tarnished, and so we were left with not much. And logic in that moment would say, okay, you better crawl on your hands and knees and go, get whatever you had back in real estate. And we said we had learned enough in our career to see the opportunities that were ahead of us in tech to say, all right, now we're going to sift through the ashes and see if we can salvage some of these things and maybe do something of our own. And that was a little over 5 years ago. And here we are still plugging.
Yeah, that is an amazing story. It really is. And just having that resilience to go through, right, as you said, rather than throw the towel in and go, okay, it obviously wasn't meant to be. I'm going to just back down. You thought, no. And I love what you just said, sifting through the ashes, because there's going to be some gold in there. There's going to be something that you can utilize. So that
Sure.
being said, that was 5 years ago, and you've now moved from being a traditional DevOps shop to this more of a hybrid outsourcing a solution type company. Where did you notice this gap, and how did you come to this particular niche? And then what did you do to make sure that this was the one you want to go after?
Sure. Yeah, we'd spent a lot of time in and out of startups, and a lot of our time has been spent in Utah, which has kind of become, a secondary tech hub to Silicon Valley. And we had encountered enough really tragic stories about startups who had a development relationship that went south. For a number of reasons where, tech is really expensive to begin with. And so there's a lot at stake when you're looking for a developer, looking for the right developer, and then communicating everything correctly so that they are building exactly what you envision. There are so many, the mechanics get kind of complex, and there's so many things that can go wrong, especially when you're outsourcing. So when you're outsourcing, you're saving a buck or two, which means a lot when you're leaning on just a seed round as a startup. But there are some risks associated with that when your developers are across the globe and you're dealing with cultural barriers and time zones and maybe language barriers, but just the fact that they are so far offside. And so the ability to have quality control and transparency is very, very limited. Now the flip side to that would be, okay, well, let's hire an in-house developer or developers, which is incredibly expensive. Once again, I mean, probably very possibly not an option for an early startup. But even if you do have the funds to bring on a developer, you are now limited to the skill set of that particular developer or that team. And scaling becomes challenging, but you're also dealing with retention, turnover, Training and paying for resources. And so then in that moment, outsourcing looks really nice. And so we said, gosh, there has got to be a way to start bridging these gaps and almost create what we call sort of a hybrid model of the two, where we're able to leverage the economics of outsourcing, but doing outsourcing right. So not all outsourcing is created equal. There is great development to be found throughout the world, and there is not so great development to be found in the world. And our years led us to find pockets throughout the world of where there is great tech, but then more specifically, the right teams, the right developers, a lot of vetting. But then that next layer that we throw on top of that to kind of create more of to mitigate some of the transparency issues and the quality control is we are more of that, when I say we, some of us partners who are less of the in the weeds tech guys, doing coding and that kind of thing, but we're coming in and we can often be almost an interim CTO or a tech advisor where we're not being transactional with people. We are looking for an opportunity to be more of a partner, to come in, see the, apply our full stack, tech team, but we come in and see things through, whether it's just even in the concept phase and help to get it launched, but overseeing a lot of the designing and the wireframing and so that's where we almost become this sort of not to use the word hybrid again because it starts to get complicated, but we do become sort of a mix of development and an accelerator where we're involved in we become involved in a lot of things beyond just the development, but we have found that people resonate with that because of those challenges and those things that we were seeing and with so many developers or so many startups and their developers.
Yeah, and that's something that I definitely want to be speaking here. So I'm going to be very careful here and stop you from jumping the gun a little bit because I want to dive in.
Yeah, sorry. I get excited.
I can see the passion that's coming out and that this is what we do. But this is a great thing because, again, the next question would be standing out. It's a crowded market, with so many development firms out there. They're competing for attention. What strategies have you used? Because we hear this so often, some of the insights that we hear often is, yes, look, I've got a great package. I've got a great service. I've got a great product. We do things differently. But that you can only get that across once you've had that first meeting. Sure. Until you've had that first meeting, you just sound and look like everybody else in the eyes of the buyer, in the eyes of the prospect. So it's a very noisy world out there. What kind of strategies have you been using thus far that has helped you stand above that noise to get that initial meeting?
Sure. Yeah, I would, it's really interesting that we're having this conversation right now because, we're in Utah and there's this big week-long event called Silicon Slopes that some of your listeners will be familiar with, but it's where a lot of we have a fair amount of tech money coming in, but it's just kind of a week of everything tech and so yesterday I was walking across a showroom with all these tech startups and I was shocked by the amount of I could walk down a line and look at all these booths and say, gosh, I don't really know what any of those really do. And not only that, but I could see an immense amount of redundancy. I see all the buzzwords like AI and SaaS and they're all the right words, but the look and the feel is very similar. And it often looks like they're trying to solve that they're trying to do a lot of the same thing. And so, I think what's happening in tech is there's a lot of excitement and someone has an idea and that excitement, can cause them to just hurdle past market research and competitive analysis. And they just go out there thinking they're going to conquer the world. But there is a lot out there and things are becoming very fragmented and very saturated. And so I think there is a real need to stop and look at, okay, where are the problems? What problems are not being addressed? People have been, throwing solutions out there left and right. Now what's not being addressed? And if it's not being addressed, then really creating the right messaging so that people can look at you. You know, we designed our website and everything to, even though our, you know, it took me a little while to explain kind of our approach. It's very wordy and there's a lot of layers to it. We've had to get creative in finding very consolidated ways of being able to convey not our message, not our company, not why we think we're cool, but specifically the problems that we want to solve that are really hindering a lot of startups right now. And I think you have to get creative, and I think you have to look at the problem and find a very succinct and creative way to get that message out there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. I'm just sitting here listening to you. And you said a couple of things, which I want to just sort of dial back on. I mean, one of the things you said there was that everyone's looking and sounding the same. You literally walked across the forecourt there. The words, yes, they're, everyone's hearing them, the buzzwords, you know, what I call the VC buzzwords, because every VC wants
exactly.
to see those words.
That's right.
On those. But they're all saying the same thing. So to the prospective customer and client, they're just looking at it and go, yeah, you're just a commodity. You sound like you, and you look like you from there.
That's right.
And again, what you said there was there are just solutions being thrown out there. That's like throwing food out to a full crowd. You know, they're not. You want to find the hungry crowd. You want to find the one person who's hungry, or the group of people that's hungry, as opposed to just chucking this solution out there, hoping that you'll find someone that actually has a problem that you can solve. So you're absolutely right. You know, you got to dig a little bit deeper. You got to be a little bit more creative to say, hey, I am. If you have this, I am the guy for this. As opposed to, look, these are the solutions I provide. Which one do you have? Which one do you want?
Yeah, you know? And also not being too broad with your sort of your product suite or your suite of offerings, where it just becomes a mile wide and an inch deep. Where it's you know, if it's too broad, then it can start to kind of dilute a lot of, you know, your offerings and what is, you know, your core message or the core thing that you really kind of hang your hat on. And so, you know, not to say that people can't be, you know, try and be broad and have a variety of services, but, you know, we have a lot of startups come to us because, you know, we're a tech firm. So we interface with a lot of startups and we see a lot of very broad, you know, social media based type platforms that require volume and you know, and then every once in a while we get something that's just a little more niche, and those are always really attractive, because in tech, even the niche markets are still, generally speaking, pretty massive, because tech is everywhere, right? This is we're talking at a global scale, and so niches isn't always what we think of as niche.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you can actually break it down. I had this conversation with a client earlier this week, and we're now looking at sub-niching. How do we dominate and be the authority into a sub-niche from that? But more importantly, like you said, if you want to stand out, if you want to stand over and above the crowd and above the noise and be the authority in it, maybe you don't need to be an authority in that niche. Maybe you could be an authority in the problem. And if you're the one solving the problem and be known for the person, the company that solves that problem, by all means, once you've solved that problem, you're now in. And now your whole broad of offerings can come out. But the initial part of standing out, because until you stand out, you're not getting spoken to, right?
Right.
Yeah. You can become an authority in that space. So talking about being an authority, one of the pillars of being an authority is partnering for growth. And this is something I know you have now, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier on. Partnering for growth, your model includes interim CTOs. And just to put some perspective on this, this isn't just coming in and being a CTO. This is actually helping other companies grow as a partner, as an interim partner from that. How have you found that working, not just for you, but for your clients as well?
Yeah. You know, I think that was a dynamic or a part of our model that we kind of fell into, and something that we learned along the way. We were, again, going back to those sifting through the ashes, sort of the redemption of that story 5 years ago is that somehow, in some way, within 3 weeks, you know, we had booked tickets to out to New York to just knock some doors, essentially, see who would still talk to us. And again, the context, I mean, we didn't know COVID was just months around the corner. And I was, my wife was at home pregnant with our first child. There is just a lot of weight on us. I digress. So we go out to New York and we're knocking doors, and somehow we ended up in the office of Kenneth Cole, the fashion mogul. In you know, you see his shoes and shirts in malls, and he somehow we're in a room with him that we have no business being in, and we're talking about this big platform he wants to build as part of his impact initiative, which was mental health. And the reason why I bring that up is, you know, we started working with a number of celebrities, and you know, there had been some interactions with Imagine Dragons on a foundation and a number of others since then. And we realized that these are the types of people that are always getting sold something or being asked for money. And we found that there was an opportunity to not be so transactional, but to take more of a partnership approach, because everyone's been burned. Everyone has been sold something and had buyer's remorse, figuratively speaking, maybe. And so we didn't want to be the sales guy. We didn't want to be the transactional ones, because those are the dev shops where things are going wrong. So we wanted to say, okay, we're going to find ways to cut costs. We're even going to reduce our profits, and we're going to compress down our development rates, and we're going to just invest in the future. You know, we're working with someone great. It's probably going to lead to something else down the road. And so we look to compress those costs. We leave money on the table, and without question, number one, most core value for us is relationships, is people, is treating people well, and doing people right. And so because it comes back, for good or bad, depending on what you do, it does come back. And so we have found that all ships do rise with the tide, and that when we take more of a partnership approach, again, the celebrity thing was just kind of the beginning of that. But anyone we talk to or work with, we try and sit on the same side of the table as them rather than being across the table. And, you know, we kind of open up our doors and be transparent, and we find that they do the same, and we can just get more done that way. And as a result, we're usually, you know, there'll be something else that we'll do down the line, or they'll refer us to someone else. It just comes back in good ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, relationships and partnerships, it's, if you're just a provider, if you're just, you can be a commodity. Partnerships aren't commodity. If you're a partner, as you say, now it's a simple way of looking at it. If you're just providing a service or providing a product, they can go and buy that elsewhere, so they can cut you really, really quickly. And the onus is on you to deliver all the time. There's no onus on them to take any accountability for it. But as partners, you're there together. You're there together as a relationship. That's right. You can grow together. So it's not just the case of you having to do the work. The onus is on them to do their part as well, so that there is that growth, you know, and I'm so glad you're doing it, because it's certainly one of the aspects that we put into our clients of growth as well, is to ensure that they are working in a partnership type of format. Now, you mentioned, you know, your decision at the time then was to when it comes down to your team, how do you balance cost and quality? Because obviously, I know from speaking to you before, you're very much of an in-house team, onshore. Right. Team, but you've recently started looking offshore, but very specifically offshore, as opposed to just throwing the towel in and say, "Hey, we're just going offshore now." How do you number one, why did you go across the shores? And number two, how do you balance cost and quality?
I think that goes back to this, and you know, we had to learn the hard way, like so many people have had to learn the hard way, and I want to be careful to not just shun entire countries or markets, but there are places where you can get really cheap tech. And you know what? That is when you are sitting on that seed round where you're just trying to figure out how you're going to get an MVP out, those rates are going to look very, very attractive. And sometimes they might make sense, but it is absolutely true in a lot of those cases that you will get what you pay for. But we realize that, you know, as you look at the economics throughout the world, but then look at the types of training and look at, so what we found was Eastern Europe, places like our kind of our happy place has been Lithuanian, but a particular team there that we've really thrived on. You know, they are coming out. It's like the number one degree coming out of college. And the design, the quality is, you know, in a lot of ways, things that we can't match here stateside. But again, you're not paying, you know, in some cases compared to markets like LA and New York, you might be paying half. But you're not compromising on that quality. I'm sure you can get something. I'm sure you could go to New York and find something better and find something top tier. But you will burn cash. And if you don't burn it in your MVP, if whatever you build at the beginning, it's going to be that much more expensive to build a phase two and to maintain it. And so, but. The inverse is true too. If you don't build something quality as an MVP, then phase two, phase three comes when you're doing a series A, maybe series B, and you're building on what is a weak foundation. So it does go both ways. But we found that this pocket is kind of strikes that balance where we can create economies, but we can also where we're not compromising quality. And we're really big, going back to the whole Disney methodology, when it comes to user experience, you know, we don't care about what competitors are doing so much because we think we can, you know, carry the day with just our design and user experience and creating really, you know, when someone opens that app and it just feels different, it feels clean, it feels inviting, it feels intuitive. That's I think that's how we can win out is we're just really big on that design and UX UI.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you've learned an awful lot over the course of the last 4-5 years, you know, so of you know, balancing growth, balancing things that you didn't expect to happen, just like every other entrepreneur does. But you're here now, you got to the stage you're at now. What is the future holding? What are you looking forward to now? Where's the growth for you now?
So yeah, and that's where once again this is timely and serendipitous this conversation we're having because you know I appreciate your methodology and the things that you're doing and because that's where our mind's at right now. We feel like for the last 5 years we were really testing this model and we were doing a lot of just you know chasing the next gig, you know, and things would just come around. And we just now we want to say, okay, let's take our message to the world. And so the last 6 months we kind of slowed things down. We said no to projects and we just went through this massive rebrand. And the purpose of the rebrand was to create sort of a new warehouse for this more refined messaging. And so that's where 88 Tech is now our brand and we're going out there. So, you know, we had a great website. We had a lot of great things before and we scrapped it all. And so new website, but also a new growth strategies. We're just starting a reseller program where we're going to be, you know, people make introductions to insurance companies. They make introductions to financial advisory. Maybe they get a little check in the mail. We would love to create that, you know, looking at the generation that we're in and how many people are building websites and tech, we would love to be the go-to for when someone is talking to their neighbor across the fence and, you know, they say they need a website, they make an introduction. We would like to cut them in on that. And so we're going to be, you know, we've always leaned on our network. So now we're going to really go all in on that with a more solidified reseller program. So it's this new brand and really refining this messaging where now we're going to take it out there and see if we can catch some eyeballs just because we're going to we're going to say we do it a little bit different. You know, we're not outsourcing, we're not in-house. That's what you're used to. We're going to try and see if we can be this third option.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I think at the end of the day, I love the fact that you put the brakes on a little bit, you're rebranded, you're looking more towards, you know, not just the company brand, but also you guys as the leaders and the owners and the founders of that. You know, we talk about founder-led sales all the way through to 10, 15 million, but founders we find more often than not tend to then push off their founder-led marketing when really they should be doubling down on that one. You use the words right there, the go-to people. You can't be the go-to person if you sound like everybody else you've given it to a marketing team to do.
Yeah,
you know, so
that's right.
I'm really looking forward to your future and seeing where you're going. So
that
being said, you know, I've got this last question for you, you know, because we've covered so much already and there's so much more we could discuss. But if you could give your younger self one piece of advice, you're looking back at everything you've learned today, what would that be?
It'll work out. It'll come together. I don't know if it's human instinct. I don't know if it's because the state of the world is what it is right now, but we are, there's a lot of fear. And so when things don't go well, a client doesn't pay or your primary funder gets arrested by the FBI and you're left with nothing. And, it's keep your head on. A lot of people respond to situations in a lot of different ways. A large percentage of those, the response is panic. If you cannot panic, take some deep breaths and know that we live in an incredible time, and the resources available to most anyone are substantial. And so it's usually not quite as bad as you think it is. And so, we got burned. And we've been burned since then. And there is something, I would go back and grab me by the lapels and just say, just take a deep breath, and sleep, get some sleep. And tomorrow is going to be better because there are nights where you almost feel like you need to have a bucket next to your bed because you think you're just going to be sick during the night. It is, it can be very emotionally strenuous, but things you just don't give up. You stick with it. And we live in the age of opportunity, and opportunities will avail themselves. If you can just be one of those that surfaces, right? If you can just be one of those that can, run into the burning building while everyone's running out. And we're still doing that. Here I am acting like I've got it all figured out. We're still figuring that out. And every month is who knows what next month looks like for us. But now I've got these 5 years of looking back and saying it hasn't been easy. But 5 years is not a short time. And so there's something to be said about making it this far to give me some degree of confidence that another 5 years is maybe manageable.
Yeah, well, that is a fantastic piece of advice to end on, Zach. You know, all it leads me to say is thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Gary,
very much for your input and your candor. It's, we love it when people come on and they literally do share from the heart as well as the mind. And, you've given a lot today. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, I have a lot of scars to show for it. It's never as quite as glamorous as what people make it seem like on social media. And so I think it is, it helps to show the scars a little bit and it helps to create some relevancy. So I appreciate it.
Does.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, not at all. Thank you very much, Zach. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for another great episode. So as usual, if you've taken and learned some stuff today, please make sure you comment and make sure you like. Make sure you subscribe so you get to hear from other tech leaders like Zach. But more importantly, make sure you share. If you know someone that could benefit from the insights that Zach has shared with you today and shared with us today, please make sure you do your sharing. So until the next episode. I look forward to speaking to you then. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.